time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we're rolling along on a Tuesday. Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes. I am Vanessa Richardson with you on 97.5, 92.5. Of course, you can hear us on the ESPN app or you can see us on Twitch. How you doing, PG?
Doing well. Lady in red. What's up with the red jacket?
It is a jacket that I'm wearing because it's cold.
It's cold here.
Ish.
Okay, but not outside.
No. Just in the studio. I'm a little bit chilly. The jacket eventually will come off, but I really did enjoy the serenading. Thank you. Oh, hello, HR. David Gow, where are you?
Are you an air conditioning truther then?
Oh, love air conditioning.
Okay, good. Because there are some air conditioning truthers who, because they're cold at the office, they feel like office air conditioning should be toned down just a little.
No, definitely. I am team air conditioning. More so, I'm actually team your bedroom should be like low temperature.
Oh, yeah, 65.
And then you just bring on the blanket.
Yeah, oh, yes. Yeah. Perfect. I'm 100% there with you. Yeah, I think you're a crazy person if you want to sleep warm.
With a box fan.
Or you're some Yankee carpetbagger telling us how to set our air conditioning, which I've seen way too many articles of. There's one a year, always one a year, and it's like, I love to wear a jacket to work.
And it is usually, yes, women that are like, we're colder, we don't need, yeah, I get it. All right, good night for the Astros last night. They beat your side chick, the Seattle Mariners, 3-0. Yordan Alvarez with the solo homer, and Jeremy Pena adding a two-run shot.
Jeremy Pena, yeah, five home runs.
Thank you.
Already this year. That is surprising. Really, I know it's not tearing the cover off the ball the way that he has been playing, but he continues to be a nice win for James Click and for the Astros' decision-making. Is he better than Carlos Correa? No, but is he the better long-term decision than Carlos Correa? Every single day, it looks like a better and better choice.
I have a hunch that we're going to be talking about Jeremy Pena for years to come. Like you said, he's not Carlos Correa, but as Jake Odorizzi said last night, he's not trying to be anybody but himself. Here's Odorizzi on Pena.
He came into his role his way. He didn't try to be somebody that he wasn't. We know how phenomenal he was with the glove. Obviously, he's got tremendous power, but he's really starting to learn how to work at bats, make adjustments to pitches, and just growing as a big leaguer, and that's what's going to make him a big leaguer for a very long time. So, you know, it's a big credit to him. He's got big shoes to fill coming in after Carlos, but he's done it the right way. He hasn't tried to do stuff that he's not capable of doing, and, you know, he plays his game very well, and I don't think we need any adjustments out of him. Just continue to go, put him in the lineup every day, let him pick it, and, you know, he's put a lot of great at-bats together, and you can see the adjustments happening right before your eyes, which is really great to see.
I think that's the best compliment that you can give, because he is the guy coming in after Carlos Correa. That's a tall task, no matter how you see it, right. No matter how you dice it up. That's a tall task. And I think for his teammates to say, you know what, he's being himself. He's not trying to be Carlos Correa, both with things he does on the field and off the field. Jeremy Pena is not as, you know, outgoing as Carlos Correa. He's just being himself. I think that's a huge compliment.
If you try to be more than yourself, generally, that doesn't go so well for anybody.
We're in therapy now. Hello.
Mm-hmm. But to Odorizzi's point, he is learning. The thing that I would like to see him get a little bit better with is his swing selection. What pitches is he going to swing at? The strikeouts are still up there. But again, he's young. This is his first month in the major leagues. And to this point, you know, I don't want to be so generous a grader like I'm an NFL draft grader, but I mean, you got to give him a B+ for what he's been able to give you thus far. The defense has picked up after that first game where there are some issues with him throwing the ball from shortstop over the first, and the power has been surprising. And it's really great to see that he is not intimidated by this. Like you see a lot of young players. I would say specifically on the other side of things with my old side chick, the Mariners.
Yeah.
Jared Kelnick is a guy who has been up there and was like the top prospect in baseball not too long ago, who is continuing to struggle at the plate. And while they've got a couple of young players over there, Kelnick's been struggling for over a year, where Jeremy Pena has not struggled at all to this point.
Meanwhile, Jake Odorizzi, we've had some questions about that. He's had some questionable starts, but he's come a long way.
We're back on the Odorizzi train.
Yeah, he talked a little bit last night about some of the feedback he's received from his teammates.
I got some great feedback from Brady, from my bullpen.
in Toronto, which was, you know, it's always helpful to get hitters' feedback. And you know, he looks up at me and he gives me feedback. And then JV, you know, with some pitching information and mindset information, was that was before the Texas start. And it's really kind of opened my eyes to a lot of different things. So having those type of guys in a clubhouse is, you know, obviously they're great players, but they're invaluable when it comes to you know, helping out teammates, whatever it may be. But for me personally, it's good to, you know, string the second one together, continue out the success last game. Maldi called a great game today, and we had some good plays behind us, getting those double plays, and yeah, just looking to keep building. It was a tough series in Toronto, so good to get off to a good start here.
Odorizzi speaks in bass.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Because all you heard was bass there.
Oh, see, I think it's impossible not to like him, because when he talks about like Justin Verlander and Alex Bregman getting that feedback and improving, he comes across as a very likable guy and somebody that's not going to be caught in like his way or the highway type of deal. So I think he's on the up and up, and it was good to hear that.
He almost went seven innings, and it's against the Mariners offense that has been in the top half of baseball to this point this year. They have seen some really good performances from some of their newest players, and I think what was most awesome about Odorizzi's night, I mean, the Mariners didn't smack any of the balls at all. They weren't turning around on anything. I think the hardest contact that was made was a line drive out that I think Kelnick hit. Otherwise, they were trying to scrap together singles at best. And, you know, you go almost seven innings in any start as in 2022 baseball, you're doing a damn good job. So this has been nice to see him bounce back in the way that he has. I do still have to say that the offense continues to frustrate me. You're 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position. You left 7 on base. And this was on a night where, yeah, the Mariners, they weren't really challenging you a whole lot. They were barely making any contact, but it still was the ninth inning where Rafael Montero, who is the equivalent of what Ken Giles was here, now in Seattle, he was that in Seattle. I remember watching Rafael Montero come in as a reliever for the Mariners last year, and every single time I wanted to turn away, change the channel, like Michael Scott was on saying something racist or homophobic.
Jose Altuve, in his first game back in the lineup, we should mention, 0-for-3 with the walk. He had been out since April 19th with the hamstring injury, and of course did a couple of games with the Sugarland Space Cowboys. Are y'all worried about Jose Altuve? Because he was struggling before he got injured, and then he got injured. Now, I didn't expect anything magical his first game back, so I'm not saying are you worried because of the one game yesterday, but just in general, him getting older, the fact that he was not exactly on fire to start the season, are you worried about Altuve?
The concern is warranted, and I know that a lot of people are saying to themselves right now, here he goes, hyper-reactive baseball Paul, but I do wonder if he is going to be the kind of offensive force, the kind of offensive plus bat that you need right now. And it's one game, you're right. But I do wonder, too, also if that hamstring injury is something that's going to nag him for the rest of the year.
That's why I asked. It's a hamstring.
Right. Yeah, he didn't miss that much time. So, I mean, that at the very least, that's good. So I guess we take the positives where we can. But I do wonder about just his longevity. And it's because I look at him, and having grown up in Boston, I think about Dustin Pedroia, another smaller stature second baseman who had a similar skill set, a lot of power despite being that small guy. And when Pedroia lost it, I mean, it was just overnight. All of a sudden, the guy couldn't play anymore. So it's only because I'm thinking about other people. That's it. That's what I do.
Thinking about other people, how about James Harden? Heat and 76ers last night. No Joel Embiid. So Harden did not have a good night. He had 16 points. I saw this stat on ESPN. This is the 11th straight playoff game for James Harden where he scores under 25 points.
What a
surprise.
He is not
what he used to be. He just isn't.
Yeah. I hate to be a guy rooting for Joel Embiid not to play because I love Joel Embiid. But for the sake of, first off, just shutting up all those Philadelphians, but second, exposing James Harden for what he is, I'm very happy with the fact that Embiid wasn't playing in this game. Like, Miami's not a dominant one seed in the Eastern Conference, but they do play with toughness, and that's something that we all know James Harden doesn't have. And I mean, they looked completely listless without Embiid out there. And you got to wonder, if you break your face, as Embiid described it, I mean, what are you going to be the rest of a series where Miami is clearly going to do whatever they can to get under your skin to potentially, you know, give your face a tap or two while you're wearing that mask when he's back out there. And what's Harden going to do? We know Harden's going to pee his pants or melt. That's it. That's what he does.
He turned the ball over. He did not look like himself. He did not have a lot of energy. It just wasn't there.
Looked like himself to me.
Do you think the 76ers have a shot at this series?
They definitely
do. You think they'll win?
It's the first game, so right. I'm feeling no. I mean, they need Embiid back out there now. And if you are the Sixers, you're finding a way. Like, what do you do? How do you numb someone's face? And I'm not talking about the Tony Montana way. No, that's not allowed. That's illegal. But how do you get it so that Embiid's not going to feel all of that as he runs up and down the court? Because that's not only something that you're going to feel with every single step in your face, but also it's going to make you a little bit wary, perhaps, of playing as physical as you want to.
Thing.
And Miami likes to play physical.
All right. Meanwhile, the Bucks at the Garden tonight, right? The Celtics.
The Garden, yeah.
Conference semifinals, game two.
I'm not feeling this one.
So how is our resident Celtics fan feeling?
Not good. Not good. Marcus Smart played like ass game one, just complete trash. And Giannis clearly does not feel any intimidation about all of the football that the Boston Celtics are trying to play with them. Because basically, that's what they were doing to Durant, and Durant can't handle that. But Giannis is a tank, and I mean, they won without Chris Middleton. So yeah, I'm stressed about tonight. I was very excited about this year, and now I'm like, oh yeah, Milwaukee was the defending champs for a reason. Damn it, this sucks.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Galat, you know what sucks? The end of a reality show that we barely knew here in Houston.
Oh.
It's going to be really sad. It's moving.
It is?
Rip Life of Lotto. That's nice.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 at 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
The show was called Life of Lotto, and it was Lonnie Johnson Jr. with a look into his life behind the scenes. He posted it on YouTube, Instagram. Paul got a little bit salty because of his amount of followers in a quick amount of time.
No, I actually felt good. This is the rare victory.
Oh, because he didn't have that many.
Yeah, I have more followers than Lonnie Johnson on YouTube. I mean, it's the first time that I've ever felt good about anything I do on social media. And then I watched a couple episodes, and I was like, okay, they're very disjointed, which many people would argue about everything I do because I can't get to a point and I go off on ADD tangents. But I thought to myself, you know what? At the very least, I am beating Lonnie Johnson at social media.
You
Thank
are
God.
Beating Lonnie Johnson. And Lonnie Johnson Jr., of course, drafted by the Texans in 2019, been here three seasons, asked for a trade, and he confirmed it on Twitter. He said, before y'all get to talking crazy with a K, by the way, crazy on this app, I ask for this myself. Thank you, Texans, for the opportunity. This isn't a farewell. This is more like see you soon.
Wait a second. First off, that last part, that makes no sense. Are you coming back?
This isn't a farewell. This is more like see you soon.
And also, before y'all start talking crazy, no offense, Lonnie. No one really cares that much. You're a second-round pick that didn't work out.
Lonnie Johnson, three seasons in Houston, started 19 games, played in 25 others, totaled 172 tackles, three interceptions, and 13 pass breakups.
Can we go a little
Not
further
exactly
with this?
The loss of the year.
He got to ask for a trade?
Yeah.
And they granted it?
That's the NFL now.
And also, I'm just continuing to ask questions here, and I don't want to sound like I'm being mean to Lonnie Johnson. I've never met him. I'm sure he's a nice guy.
Yeah, I like him. He's from Gary, Indiana.
But wouldn't you rather be released than traded for a conditional seventh-round pick 2 years from now? That is literally the least amount of anything you could be traded for in the NFL. A conditional last round of the NFL draft pick. I'm just sorry, but wow. On so many different levels here, Lonnie Johnson asked for a trade, thought it was a big deal that he was getting traded, wanted people to
Before
know that he asked
start
for said trade.
Crazy.
Acted as if people were going to talk about this at all. I mean, I guess we are doing it right now, but man,
because
a lot of layers here.
Because it is the team that we cover. Here's the bottom line. This goes back to what we've talked about, and it is a discussion that they're having on every network show, every radio show that covers sports in America. Why are we giving players all this power to say, I want that? Give it to me. Now, if you're one of the great players, yeah, okay.
Even then.
But Lonnie Johnson?
Yeah.
Asks for a trade, and the Texans are like, all right.
They must not.
So weird.
If you do go back, though, circle back to that Lovie Smith clip that we played that made me feel like the Texans were going to draft a cornerback in the first round. He also said, at that cornerback position last year, we weren't good enough. So I imagine, too, for the Texans, they were like, yeah, we don't really need Lonnie Johnson around anymore. Optimally, we could just part ways with him. So they probably made a million phone calls. And I don't know if this had to even do with the fact that Lonnie Johnson asked for a trade. I'm sure that they had called around, especially after they drafted Derek Stingley Jr., thinking to themselves, there's not a lot of upside here. Let's see if we can get anything in return for him. I guess credit to Nick Caserio. They did get value in return for a guy that asked for a trade who's not good.
Justin Reed, of course, now with the Kansas City Chiefs as well, retweeted the Chiefs tweet that said, we have acquired cornerback Lonnie Johnson Jr. via a trade. Welcome to KC, Lonnie Johnson. You have to think maybe Justin Reed was part of that process.
Maybe.
Maybe they asked him. Maybe he talked a little bit to Lonnie and said, hey, this is a place that you'd want to be. It's just very odd to me that Lonnie Johnson Jr. is able to determine his own fate.
Yeah, and he, again, this could be him just spin zoning it for the public.
Yeah, that could be true.
Because he does seem to care a lot about his story, given that he has a YouTube series about his story. And man, can you wait for episode 5 when he talks about, hey, I demanded a trade from the Houston Texans, and they have some drama, like some slow build music in the background as he waits to hear what they're going to say to him.
0061 brings up a good point. Lonnie Johnson is the reason KC came back from a 21-0. Kelsey owned him. He was not good in that game. That's actually an astute point.
No one was.
No one was, but that's a great point because Kelsey was a big part of that game. We'll see how it works out. Hopefully Lonnie Johnson Jr. Do you have something, Sean?
Yeah, there's a chance that this, like Paul said, this will be the most successful episode of Life of Lotto yet, episode 5, because none of them have cracked 2,000 views. But
oh, no.
Yeah, and the first one was 1.8, and then they haven't cracked 1,000 since.
Okay. Okay, so, yeah, this is his big moment.
What if that's why he demanded a trade?
I think it is, Sean. We're on the same wavelength
there. Get that YouTube rub.
Yeah.
PETA isn't real, and Lonnie Johnson wanted a trade for his reality show. I mean, truly.
I think the latter is a lot more realistic.
No. I think PETA is fake. PETA was started.
I think they're both true. I'm nodding along.
PETA was started by meat companies. Hello, Tyson's Chicken. But, yeah, I mean, Lonnie Johnson Jr. not getting the attention he wants for his reality show.
Yeah.
Anybody watched a full episode? Because I haven't yet.
No.
I watched like the first couple minutes of the first episode. That's probably why it has so many more views. But I mean, to be honest, like, yeah, I get why he would want to demand a trade. So when he gets traded, he can be like, yep, yeah, see, got
so
my
you
way.
Think it's a narrative spin.
I do. Mm-hmm. And I think the Texans were just going to cut him, and like Paul said, they did like him a favor of just calling around. They got literally as little as you can possibly get.
Seriously.
For an NFL player.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is some sort of like he demanded. Like the Texans were hoping to keep him.
The only
but
thing
why? Sorry, go ahead.
That would have been worse is like a 2025 conditional
right.
Seventh round pick.
But why do the Texans, when players want something like J.J. Watt? I love J.J. Watt. He did a lot for the city, but J.J. Watt was like, I want to go. And the Texans were like, awesome.
Well,
not the same thing. Let's just be clear about
that. No, it's about the same.
But
Lonnie Johnson, J.J. Watt.
Like,
yeah.
I always
very
go
similar.
Back to the way that they spun that, which is, you know what? J.J. Watt gave so much to this city. We did him a solid. Well, I don't care.
Lonnie
business,
gave us Life of Lotto.
Yeah.
Lonnie Johnson gave so much to the city. So much content.
But no, but seriously, why do the Texans just give people what they want?
Well, I mean, I think you kind of have to do this when you suck. I mean, are the Rockets not doing the same thing?
It could be that too, because there's so much bad PR around their front office and how they do things. They have to kind of show, you know, they'll make players whole, and so players don't absolutely not want to come here.
Yeah,
that's
you
a
keep,
good point.
And you got to keep stacking those dubs. So this is a PR win for the Houston Texans.
Shout out to the PR staff. We do like the PR staff. With Lonnie Johnson Jr. now traded, this is an interesting question posed by my guy at Gallant Says.
Are we going to go back through?
Was the Texans 2019 draft class the worst
all the bad
draft class in Texans history?
Yeah, I saw my guy Greg Rajan from the Houston Chronicle tweet out the Houston Texans 2019 draft, and I was just like, good God, I forgot that we went through yesterday all the depressing moments the last couple of years for the Houston Texans. So, I mean, all right, look, they got Titus Howard in the first round, and fifth-year option to use, so he's going to play every single year that he possibly could for the Texans. But Lonnie Johnson, second-round pick. Max Sharping is a second-round pick. Kahale Waring had three catches in two seasons. Charles Aminihou was traded in 2021. He did play for the San Francisco 49ers. Xavier Crawford, I'm not sure that's a real person, played four games in 2019. And then Aggie legend, Colin Gillespie.
Colin was nice. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. Yeah, he was like Mr. Aggie or something, the Aggieth man. Oh, what? He was the 12th player.
Who was the GM for this? Was this Gain or Smith?
I don't know, Satan. I'm just kidding. This was just a bad year. I don't know if this was O'Brien or Smith or Easterby, whatever the case. That draft class was bad. And I think that was right before they moved on from Brian Gain.
I was going to say, this was like a week before Brian Gain got fired. Because yeah. I remember it was weird that when they fired Gain.
So well, it was Gain. This was Gain's final.
Spin Zone, the Texans knew the draft class was awful. They fired Brian Gain right afterwards. They saw the draft grades online after the draft was done. They're like, nope, Brian, you're done. You're out of here. But they that's never good when you have a draft class and then you fire the general manager right afterwards. Like, what's the point?
It's part of a grander plan for the Texans. it'd be hard to find one worse than this.
Yeah.
Titus Howard has worked out. But other than Howard.
He's been on the team.
He has been on the team, has been versatile, and has been a team-first guy, which the Texans would be a better way of saying it.
I'm not even trying to dump on his career. All I'm saying is like they clearly don't really 100% know how to use him, seeing as they've been moving him all
over
the place.
Which one was the water polo guy? Kahale, right?
Kahale Waring. Yeah, I remember I was really excited about that. Like, this guy,
like, Bill O'Brien tried to sell that his ability at water polo would translate on the football field.
I got to say, though, like, among tough sports, water polo is up there. Have you ever watched it? You're swimming in water that you can't touch the ground in, and they're basically guys are trying to drown each other over the course of a game. It's pretty brutal.
But, I like what 8656 said. Clearing out the old BOB bull crap. Keeping solid players, no, dumping the crap
out. You guys just don't get it. Like, O'Brien was playing chess while you guys were playing checkers. Okay.
He knew something, and we will get to that.
He knew Bryce Young was going to be available in next year's draft class, and the best way to have the Texans have the number one overall pick was to completely whiff the 2019 draft class.
Bill O'Brien was playing chess, not checkers. And could he have known that this was about to happen? Mm-hmm. A huge story in the NFL. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Did Bill O'Brien know something that we didn't know?
I think so. Again, he played chess while we all played checkers. You just don't get it. It's the Patriot way.
It is the Patriot way. Crazy stuff coming out of Arizona yesterday as DeAndre Hopkins suspended 6 games, 3-time All-Pro receiver, of course, former Texans legend. He's going to lose $4 million of that $17 million salary as he was found to have taken performance-enhancing drugs, yes, which he, of course, vehemently denied and gave the same response. I'm not even going to read it because it's the same thing everybody else says, which is, quote-unquote, I'm shocked.
It wasn't an outright denial, but it was a, oh, my bad kind of, this was just me being careless.
He said he didn't know that. Yeah, he said he and his trainers were going to investigate. You're right. He didn't say he didn't take anything. He just said he was shocked and basically was like, I can't believe this happened.
You're right that it was just like every single other script that you see put out by a
Will
player.
Will Fuller.
Right. Here are my favorite parts of this statement. I was confused and shocked.
Shocked.
You think like someone
shocked.
Someone broke into my, I don't know. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Someone broke into my house and put a little extra powder in my protein powder. My second favorite moment from this. I am working with my team to investigate how this could have happened.
How could it have happened? You have one of the best nutritional people in the country.
They give you a list of stuff you can't have. It's pretty available. The third thing. I fully intend to get to the bottom of this. As soon as I have more information, I will share it. I mean, it sounds like OJ here. I will get to the bottom of this someday. I will find that person who potentially did this. I got to say, though, whether or not this was taken to for legitimate reasons, he said he tested for it in November. So that means that this was something he tested positive for before he tore his MCL about a month later in December. But do you care? You know, is a 6-game suspension for PEDs a little much? I think it is.
I think it is as well, especially when you have guys that have been accused of worse things. I mean, this is one of those things. I hate to tie it to Deshaun Watson because it's so different. But what if the NFL only suspends Deshaun Watson 5 games?
Mm.
I mean, but right? And then they suspend DeAndre Hopkins 6 games?
Right. They suspend Tom Brady 4 games? It's one of those things where you look at it and you're like, okay, well, who really is the bad guy here? You know? Hopkins getting this much is, I think, over the top. I feel like PED positive test, if you feel the need to go by this anymore, can it become a fine? I mean, don't we all assume that most of these players in the NFL are on something? They're all like 270-pound, 6'4" behemoths running 4.4 40s.
It's like they're not human,
right? I mean, I assume that all of these guys are taking unnatural things to make sure that they're 100%. And you would think that team owners would say, "Why? Wait a second, what? We want our players to take HGH. We want our players to be as 100% healthy and strong as we can every single game." You know, to go back to, like, in our last segment, how some people, when you talk about, like, player empowerment, and the people that hate player empowerment are characterized as having, like, plantation mindset. But let's be honest about some owners. They're looking at their players, if not as property, as employees.
Sure.
Don't you want these guys available and as healthy as much as possible? It's weird that PED suspensions are still a thing because, I get it. Maybe we're still looking at football the same way we look at the Olympics or something like that. But I don't know. This sport is so barbaric and violent. I feel like if you're willing to take these PEDs and deal with whatever long-term consequences come from taking them, because they do happen, they're unnatural substances that you're putting into your body, then I feel like you should be allowed to do it.
This does give context to the Hollywood Brown trade. I thought former GM Scott Pioli, this was really interesting on Good Morning Football today. He said teams know about these results weeks and sometimes months in advance. So what we thought was, oh, they're just bringing in Hollywood Brown because he and Kyler are really good friends, an extra weapon. No, they knew that DeAndre Hopkins was going to be out the first 6 games of the season. It does add some context to that. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I didn't realize that teams could know months in advance, but that's what, you know, Scott Pioli has been in the war room and has been a GM. So I thought that was an interesting point, and it gives more context to the fact that they knew that they would need help.
I think this goes back to a point, you know, a couple of years ago, I remember Josh Gordon tested positive for PEDs, but the Patriots released him, and this was before he had actually come, it had been made public that he tested positive for it, and then they just outright cut him, so Seattle brought him in, and he played with the Seahawks for a couple of games, and he had a really good last game against the Carolina Panthers, and then he tested positive again, and he was on the list for forever, which was always his biggest problem. And it wasn't just weed that time for Josh Gordon. There was also PEDs that were the reason that he ended up getting suspended indefinitely before the Seahawks brought him back, before he got suspended indefinitely again.
Do you think Kyler Murray is going to step up and be able to handle this without DeAndre Hopkins?
It's 6 games. It's not like he's out for the whole year.
Right.
So I think so. I think that it'll be honestly good for the Cardinals to continue to have to figure out how to play without DeAndre Hopkins. Now, it could potentially put them in a spot in the NFC West where they're behind the eight ball very early on. And we saw how the season finished. But look, if Cliff Kingsbury has any offensive acumen whatsoever, you have to be able to adapt to a situation like this. You had to do it at the end on the fly at the end of last year. Okay, maybe you couldn't do it. But now this offseason, you've had a chance to prepare for it, and you should find a way to be able to make this offense work without DeAndre Hopkins. You have Rondale Moore, who is an unbelievable little speedster. Hollywood Brown is at the very least capable as a number two wide receiver. You brought in that tight end from wherever the hell, Colorado State. And you, I feel like at this point in time, have enough. So make it work, Cliff. You have no excuse.
I do think the pressure is on Cliff Kingsbury. And I think it would be fair to say, you know, teams give contract extensions all the time and then end up firing guys. So I am well aware that Cliff got a contract and that he got a nice contract. But I think the seat is warm. If they are not able, I wouldn't say he's on the hot seat.
It should be hot.
I just think that it should be hot, but I think that the seat is warm and it is warming up. And it is on him and Kyler to make some offensive decisions. You have to remember, they started the season, what, 8-0 last year?
Yeah.
And they weren't able to finish.
No, they finished what? Were they 11-6?
They were 1-4, I think, without DeAndre Hopkins, which is why I bring up, can Kyler Murray step up? Will Hollywood Brown be the guy? And I think the pressure is on Cliff Kingsbury. Yeah, it's great that he got that contract extension. Just because he got a contract extension doesn't mean they couldn't axe him.
I wonder, did he get that job because he's handsome? I mean, he was so unqualified.
Yeah,
he got fired by Texas Tech, only to get promoted to offensive coordinator at USC, which you could argue is as good a job as being the head coach at Texas Tech. And then on top of that, the guy goes from not even a down with USC to being the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. How does any of that happen based off of anything we have seen from Cliff Kingsbury over the course of his coaching career?
The discussion around black coaches missing out on opportunities to the white Wonder Boy coaches is a very gray area, nuanced one that is more detailed than people think.
This
but,
is a good example.
No, that's what I'm. That's where it was going.
Yeah.
Was this is actually one of the cases where you look at the people that possibly could have gotten that job and how qualified they were, offensive coordinators, head coaches, and such. And then you look at Cliff Kingsbury, and yeah, I mean, he got a job that you could argue he didn't deserve, especially after Patrick Mahomes fell so far in the draft, and that was his coach.
You want to work for Brian Flores? I mean,
you
could be the assistant on this team if you're going to bring that information in. Look at this handsome jackass. He's not good. He's never done anything.
He does dress well. And that picture of him, do you remember that picture of him from the draft last year where he had his like loafers and his feet up on the table in just that absolute mansion? Something tells me he does well in the ladies' department.
He lives in Scottsdale.
Oh, well, he's living your dream.
He is who I want to be.
Paul Gallant, I thought I heard the twinge of jealousy, and I couldn't figure it out because he doesn't have a YouTube.
I want to be Cliff Kingsbury, 100%. That's why I called him a handsome jackass. He is. Damn it, I want to be the handsome jackass.
What does Paul Gallant have to do to become the next Cliff Kingsbury?
Get rich.
713-780-3776 or tweet
trying.
Us. What does Paul Gallant have to do to get
say
on?
It? What up?
Cliff Kingsbury's level. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, the NFL continues its journey overseas. Plus, we discuss a little game of Would You Rather. That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
If you've ever dreamed of hanging out with Lance and John or Joel and Jeremy, me and Paul, or Keyshawn Johnson, you can do it. Next week, it's our 2022 Listener Appreciation Party. Join us, along with our special guest from ESPN, Keyshawn Johnson, on Wednesday, May 11th. That's at St. Arnold Brewery. We're going to be broadcasting live from noon to 9 p.m. So come hang out with us. Great beer, great food, door prizes, and a lot more. Chef Ryan at St. Arnold, get this, even came up with a special pizza for Keyshawn called Just Give Me the Damn Pizza. So come out May 11th, Listener Appreciation Party at St. Arnold Brewery. Going to be a good time.
Get me some lawnmowers, please.
Yes.
Thank you.
Some lawnmowers.
Yeah, it's one of the St. Arnold beers.
Oh, yummy. That's right. I forgot that was St. Arnold.
I think that's their flagship beer.
Yeah,
I could be
you're
wrong
more of
that.
The beer aficionado, but yeah, I'm
it's a very polite way of saying
that you drink a lot and that
that I'm not a drunk.
That it's
Thank you.
It's an every weekend thing. meanwhile, If there's one sport we know that's trying to, quote unquote, go international, it would be the National Football League. They've constantly had games in London. They've experimented with some different things, including now an international pathway program. But let's start with this. NFL Network tomorrow is going to announce the out-of-country games for this season, 2022. So there's going to be two games in London, one game in Mexico, and one game in Munich, Germany. Why do you look like this is a bad idea?
Why?
I think it's wonderful.
Why? Why? They're never going to embrace it. Why? Why are you even trying
You don't think
this?
That people overseas are going to embrace the NFL?
They have no idea how it works. We're going to give this to the Germans now?
It's just one game.
It's two games in Munich. It's two games in London.
Yeah, it is. It's
one
five
game
games
in,
total.
It's one game in Mexico that'll probably be canceled because the Estadio Azteca is a dump. And we're going to take these games away from fans in the United States?
If you talk to people that covered the Texans played in Mexico a while back, right?
Yes.
It was a disaster.
Yes, it was a complete disaster.
It was
disaster.
Actually really unsafe.
And they canceled the last game in Mexico. They actually canceled it last minute. I forget what year this was, but they canceled the bleeping game. It's not going to work.
It was actually the Chiefs-Rams Monday night
yes,
game that they
right.
scored a million points. That game was supposed to be in Mexico.
That's right.
And you think that would have happened like that in Mexico where they have all those laser pointers that
well,
are burning
Well, there's the time
in?
Difference as well. I mean, it's
there's the altitude, too. Yeah. There's the smog. Look, and Mexico City at the very least makes sense, seeing as it's a neighboring country and there does seem to be actual interest in football. They just need a better stadium than Estadio Azteca. But why, England? They don't care. They never will. The Germans aren't going to care either. Like, the only people that would care about it are people that are on military bases in Germany or something like
point.
That. But that's it.
Do you think it's worth the NFL still trying?
No.
You think that they should... So you think no games in London, Mexico, anywhere? You think every game should be played on U.S. soil?
Mexico, maybe.
Okay.
Because that's our neighbors, and it makes sense. And you could theoretically
Paul's
have a
Berry,
team
get
there
out of
someday.
My country right
well,
now.
Well, yes! They're taking our jerbs! They should... Five games? Five games overseas. Like, that's bogus.
Five games is... I will say this. I'll meet you in the middle on this. Five games is a lot.
Yeah.
And you are taking that away from season ticket holders.
Yes.
You're taking it away from people that actually love the game, want the game. It's almost like the NFL doesn't know what it has in all of these loyal fans. I am, though, for having one game in one of these places and making a spectacle out of it. And what I mean by that is have one game in Germany, one game in London, or like you said, have the one game in Mexico. And make it a production. Have your best broadcast crew. Have it be almost like, you know, a fun event where you teach other cultures about NFL football. One game. But five is a lot, to your point.
I mean, the only way that it could be entertaining is that they force like Germans to watch it or something like that. But like, I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure that my grandfather who fought in World War II does not want the United States to be playing American football in Germany. Like if his Eagles, my grandfather's like diehard Eagles fan, like everyone in Philadelphia, if he saw them playing in Germany, he would be pissed. He would hate seeing
yeah,
that.
Yeah. There's the older veteran standpoint. I
mean, look, there's not that many people.
I don't mean
left
NFL veteran. I mean like,
yeah,
I will say this though. This is the opportunity for the NFL to try and expand.
They can, but I just it's not. This isn't like basketball or soccer where it's already appreciated overseas.
Even in baseball, you could make that argument too. In certain areas,
like right?
Venezuela,
but baseball would have a hard time in Europe too. Like Europe's into soccer. That's what they like. That's all they care about. And I feel like you just have a deluded sense of self if you think that by playing games overseas that you were going to all of a sudden get people into the game. Like I'm sorry, it's just. We have like 100 years of American football being played here. You are so far behind. And their idea is clearly they want to have teams overseas eventually. But yeah, it's just I don't see how this ever works
Paul
or
Gallant
how this
says,
wins.
Stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going
yes,
to happen.
Stop trying to make football American happen in another country.
Isn't this kind of the byproduct of bumping up to 17 games where you
yeah.
can still have 8 home games, 8 road games, and one
it's a great
game
point.
In Munich or game anywhere? I mean, I would like them to get more creative with it instead of just going to the same three places where they don't really care about football, play in other venues, play in college stadiums, I mean, just move it around. Be a little bit more forward-thinking than just throwing them into soccer stadiums.
Yeah. Like, why not, I don't know, do it in...
Saints play in Baton Rouge. In Death Valley.
I actually wouldn't mind the idea of playing in college stadiums, but none of these NFL teams would ever accept that. They will only accept playing in these fancy European places, because this is also partly about some of these NFL owners wanting to, you know, have a nice little vacation.
Flex their muscles and all of that. Yeah. Meanwhile, the NFL started the International Pathway Program. So four different teams do get a foreign player. And as part of... As part of the NFL International Pathway Program, the Texans have been allocated 6'5", 272-pound defensive lineman Adedeo Odeleye, formerly of the Berlin Thunder. So here's where it's interesting. These players do not count against the 90-player offseason roster limit. He is eligible for an international practice squad exemption, too. That is according to Aaron Wilson.
See, this is actually cool, because this is how you could potentially build up interest in another country for a specific player.
You have a star player coming over here to play and having a shot.
Right. Like, who was that guy that was on the San Francisco 49ers, the rugby star that they brought over a couple of years ago? I forget his name, but that, to me, that makes more sense. You know, how did the NBA become as big as it did in basketball? Well, you had Yao Ming come over. How did the NBA become as big as it did in basketball? That makes no sense. How did the NBA become as big as it did in China? I mean, Yao Ming coming over here was huge. And the Rockets decided to pander to China and make their uniforms look like melting communism. That's besides the point. They brought over Yao Ming, and all of a sudden, like, interest in the NBA in China skyrocketed. And they made a ton of money off of that. That's how you do it. Playing games overseas there, I just don't think that that really does a whole lot of anything. Football games are not that fun to go to unless you are tailgating with friends.
It's better on TV.
Yeah.
It's one of the sports that's better on TV. 7095 brings up an interesting point. Tyler here, not to mention how unfair it is to those teams who have to bounce back from the travel and how much that sucks. That was a legitimate complaint that players had about the overseas games. Players didn't seem to like it, by the way. Like, if you, the resounding, like, fans and all of that, and the players were like, yeah, because it is really hard on your body.
You get a bye week generally afterwards when this takes place, and I think they've been trying to do that with some of the Thursday night games, too, going forward to, like, try to make some of the bye weeks circled around those specific games. But yeah, that's another element of it too, and that's something that the NFL, they're never going to be able to quite overcome. And the only reason you play these games overseas is if you're trying to find a market for one of your teams to play in. And again, it's just not, there are fans of the NFL overseas. I actually used to do a podcast from time to time with these two British guys who were Seahawks fans.
And
it was like actually very fun. They're very nice guys. There are fans overseas, but it's just not, it's not the same. It's something that I feel like would ultimately be a loss for the first couple of years unless the team is good. I think it would get the same kind of reception that an NFL team in Los Angeles gets, you know? Where, hey, if they're good, like the Rams are now, okay, well, that's different. But
the Rams are starting to attract fans because of that.
But if you don't win, like you're an afterthought. You are the Chargers, essentially. You know, you are just, and even if you have good moments, you're not Manchester United. You're not Arsenal or Liverpool or all the other big soccer schools. Chelsea, there you go. See,
Thank you, all the big soccer
programs over there. So
soccer matters.
Why do you call them soccer programs? All the soccer clubs. So yeah, I just don't think it's ever going to work.
I believe
overseas.
It's called FC.
I hate that. And then in the MLS, like, we try to copy
this. And then
they
tried, yeah. Do you remember? Okay.
Real Salt Lake. There's all Mormons there.
Local news moment. About a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, where the Houston Dynamo send out a release and they're like, big announcement tomorrow. And we have Brian Ching and we have all of the big guns coming in to make this announcement. And so I'm like, okay, great. So they make this announcement and it's that they were adding FC to Houston Dynamo's name.
Houston Dynamo FC.
Which is cool. I don't know that it was
of
a deal.
It's not cool. I'm sorry.
Paul is not on team trying to make things European.
We are our own thing.
Totally.
We have city name, nickname, and yet you have, like, over here, the Real Salt Lake one. I cannot get past that.
It is the most white place in the United States of America. There is no diversity whatsoever. And all I can think of is like, are you trying to be Madrid? Like, right. Sorry, we are not Spanish.
That's the thing. I believe that means royal. So it's royal Madrid.
And when you think about royal, you think about Salt Lake City.
It makes no sense.
At least make it like Miami or L.A., like somewhere with a Hispanic population.
Yes, that would actually make sense, you know? But this is like Salt Lake City. What
it's almost like they did it as a joke. Like they're just,
and
like,
if they did, then I like it.
Actually, they did to fit in with the Utah Jazz. How Utah just has the most ill-named teams possible.
I do like the Jazz name, though.
Unbelievable.
All right, if you own your home, listen to me for a second. Grab your phone. Our friends at TGS Insurance are about to deliver big savings, and you don't even have to talk to an agent. You know you're paying too much for your home insurance, but you don't shop for better rates because it's such a hassle, but it does not have to be anymore, my friends, thanks to TGS. They have a new system. It instantly shops over 36 carriers, gives you a full quote in just 15 seconds using just that text. So text MONEY, M-O-N-E-Y, to 232323. They're going to ask for your home address. You send that back, and then you get all those options for great coverage within 15 seconds. This company is legit. The savings are legit. Their online rating is nearly perfect. And last year, their average customer saved over $870 on their home insurance. No one likes to shop for home insurance, but TGS makes it the easiest it's ever been. You're one text away from big, big savings. One more time, MONEY, 232323. Get your home insurance quote and save big today.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.